Disc 2.
"Your coming to live here is one of the most exciting things that has ever happened to this place," said Mrs. Bantry cheerfully, and she looked towards the mantelpiece. Whereupon, almost as an afterthought, Marina Gregg said,
"You don't know my husband, do you? Jason, this is Mrs. Bantry."
Mrs. Bantry looked at Jason Rudd with some interest. Her first impression that this was one of the ugliest men she had ever seen became qualified. He had interesting eyes. They were, she thought, more deeply sunk in his head than any eyes she had seen. "Deep, quiet pools," said Mrs. Bantry to herself, and felt like a romantic lady novelist. The rest of his face was distinctly craggy, almost ludicrously out of proportion. His nose jutted upwards, and a little red paint would have transformed it into the nose of a clown very easily. He had, too, a clown's big, sad mouth. Whether he was at this moment in a furious temper, or whether he always looked as though he were in a furious temper, she did not quite know. His voice, when he spoke, was unexpectedly pleasant, deep and slow. "A husband," he said, "is always an afterthought. But let me say with my wife that we're very glad to welcome you here. I hope you don't feel that it ought to be the other way about."
"You must get it out of your head," said Mrs. Bantry, "that I've been driven forth from my old home. It never was my old home. I've been congratulating myself ever since I sold it. It was a most inconvenient house to run. I liked the garden, but the house became more and more of a worry. I've had a perfectly splendid time ever since, travelling abroad and going seeing my married daughters and my grandchildren and my friends in all different parts of the world."
"Daughters?" said Marina Gregg. "You have daughters and sons?"
"Two sons and two daughters," said Mrs. Bantry. "And pretty widely spaced. One in Kenya, one in South Africa, one near Texas, and the other, thank goodness, in London."
"Four," said Marina Gregg. "Four. And grandchildren?"
"Nine up to date," said Mrs. Bantry. "It's great fun being a grandmother. You don't have any of the worry of parental responsibility. You can spoil them in the most unbridled way."
Jason Rudd interrupted her. "I'm afraid the sun catches your eyes," he said, and went to a window to adjust the blind.
"You must tell us all about this delightful village," he said as he came back.
He handed her a cup of tea.
"Will you have a hot scone, or a sandwich, or this cake? We have an Italian cook, and she makes quite good pastry and cakes. You see, we have quite taken to your English afternoon tea."
"Delicious tea, too,"
said Mrs. Bantry, sipping the fragrant beverage. Marina Gregg smiled and looked pleased. The sudden nervous movement of her fingers, which Jason Rudd's eyes had noticed a minute or two previously, was stilled again. Mrs. Bantry looked at her hostess with great admiration. Marina Gregg's heyday had been before the rise to supreme importance of vital statistics. She could not have been described as sex incarnate, or the bust, or the torso. She had been long and slim and willowy. The bones of her face and head had had some of the beauty associated with those of Garbo. She had brought personality to her pictures, rather than mere sex. The sudden turn of her head, the opening of the deep, lovely eyes, the faint quiver of her mouth, all these were what brought to one that sudden feeling of breathtaking loveliness that comes not from regularity of feature, but from sudden magic of the flesh that catches the onlooker unawares. She still had this quality, though it was not now so easily apparent. Like many film and stage actresses, she had what seemed to be a habit of turning off personality at will. She could retire into herself, be quiet, gentle, aloof, disappointing to an eager fan.
And then suddenly the turn of the head, the movement of the hands, the sudden smile, and the magic was there. One of her greatest pictures had been Mary, Queen of Scots, and it was of her performance in that picture that Mrs. Bantry was reminded now as she watched her. Mrs. Bantry's eyes switched to the husband. He too was watching Marina. Off guard for a moment, his face expressed clearly his feelings.
"Good Lord," said Mrs. Bantry to herself, "the man adores her."
She didn't know why she should feel so surprised. Perhaps because film stars and their love affairs and their devotion were so written up in the press that one never expected to see the real thing with one's own eyes. On an impulse, she said, "I do hope you'll enjoy it here, and that you'll be able to stay here some time. Do you expect to have the house for long?"
Marina opened wide, surprised eyes as she turned her head.
"I want to stay here always," she said. "Oh, I don't mean that I shan't have to go away a lot. I shall, of course. There's a possibility of making a film in North Africa next year, although nothing's settled yet. No, but this will be my home. I shall come back here. I shall always be able to come back here." She sighed. "That's what's so wonderful, to have found a home at last."
"I see," said Mrs. Bantry, but at the same time she thought to herself, "All the same, I don't believe for a moment that it will be like that. I don't believe you're the kind that can ever settle down."
Again she shot a quick, surreptitious glance at Jason Rudd. He was not scowling now. Instead he was smiling, a sudden, very sweet and unexpected smile. But it was a sad smile.
"He knows it too," thought Mrs. Bantry.
The door opened and a woman came in. "Bartlett wants you on the telephone, Jason," she said.
"Tell them to call back."
"They said it was urgent." He sighed and rose.
"Let me introduce you to Mrs. Bantry," he said. "Ella Zielinski, my secretary."
"Have a cup of tea, Ella," said Marina, as Ella Zielinski acknowledged the introduction with a smiling, "pleased to meet you."
"I'll have a sandwich," said Ella. "I don't go for China tea."
Ella Zielinski was, at a guess, 35. She wore a well-cut suit, a ruffled blouse, and appeared to breathe self-confidence. She had short-cut black hair and a wide forehead.
"You used to live here, so they tell me," she said to Mrs. Bantry. "It's a good many years ago now," said Mrs. Bantry. "After my husband's death, I sold it, and it's passed through several hands since then."
"Mrs. Bantry really says she doesn't hate the things we've done to it," said Marina.
"I should be frightfully disappointed if you hadn't," said Mrs. Bantry. "I came up here all agog. I can tell you the most splendid rumours have been going around the village. Never knew how difficult it was to get hold of plumbers in this country," said Miss Zielinski, champing a sandwich in a businesslike way. "Not that that's been really my job," she went on.
"Everything is your job," said Marina, "and you know it is, Ella. The domestic staff and the plumbing and the arguing with the builders.
They don't seem ever to have heard of a picture window in this country."
Ella looked towards the window. "It's a nice view, I must admit."
"A lovely, old-fashioned, rural English scene," said Marina. "This house has got atmosphere."
"It wouldn't look so rural if it wasn't for the trees," said Ella Zielinski. "That housing estate down there grows while you look at it." "That's new since my time," said Mrs. Bantry. "You mean there was nothing but the village when you lived here?" Mrs. Bantry nodded. "It must have been hard to do your shopping."
"I don't think so," said Mrs. Bantry. "I think it was frightfully easy."
"I understand having a flower garden," said Ella Zielinski, "but you folk over here seem to grow all your vegetables as well. Wouldn't it be much easier to buy them? There's a supermarket."
"It's probably coming to that," said Mrs. Bantry with a sigh.
They don't taste the same, though.
Don't spoil the atmosphere, Ella, said Marina.
The door opened and Jason looked in.
Darling, he said to Marina, I hate to bother you, but would you mind? They just want your private view about this.
Marina sighed and rose. She trailed languidly towards the door.
"It's always something," she murmured. "I'm so sorry, Mrs. Bantry. I don't really think this will take longer than a minute or two."
"Atmosphere," said Ella Zelinsky as Marina went out and closed the door. "Do you think the house has got atmosphere?"
"I can't say I ever thought of it that way," said Mrs. Bantry. "It was just a house. Rather inconvenient in some ways, and very nice and cozy in other ways."
"That's what I should have thought," said Ella Zelinsky.
She cast a quick, direct look at Mrs. Bantry. "Talking of atmosphere, when did the murder take place here?"
"No murder ever took place here," said Mrs. Bantry. "Oh, come now. The stories I've heard..."
"There are always stories, Mrs. Bantry."
"On the hearth rug, right there, wasn't it?"
said Miss Zelinsky, nodding towards the fireplace.
"Yes," said Mrs. Bantry. "That was the place."
"So there was a murder."
Mrs. Bantry shook her head.
"The murder didn't take place here. The girl who had been killed was brought here and planted in this room. She'd nothing to do with us."
Miss Zelinsky looked interested.
"Possibly you had a bit of difficulty making people believe that," she remarked.
"You're quite right there," said Mrs. Bantry.
"When did you find it?"
"The housemaid came in the morning," said Mrs. Bantry, "with early morning tea. We had housemaids then, you know."
"I know," said Miss Zelinsky, "wearing print dresses that rustled."
"I'm not sure about the print dress," said Mrs. Bantry. "It may have been overalls by then. At any rate, she burst in and said there was a body in the library. I said nonsense. Then I woke up my husband and we came down to see."
"And there it was," said Miss Zelinsky. "My, the way things happen."
She turned her head sharply towards the door and then back again.
"Don't talk about it to Miss Gregg, if you don't mind," she said. "It's not good for her, that sort of thing."
"Of course, I won't say a word," said Mrs. Bantry. "I never do talk about it, as a matter of fact. It all happened so long ago. But won't she, Miss Gregg, I mean, won't she hear it anyway?"
"She doesn't come very much in contact with reality," said Ella Zelinsky. "Film stars can lead a fairly insulated life, you know. In fact, very often one has to take care that they do. Things upset them. Things upset her. She's been seriously ill the last year or two, you know. She only started making a comeback a year ago."
"She seems to like the house," said Mrs. Bantry, "and she feels she will be happy here."
"I expect it'll last a year or two," said Ella Zelinsky.
"Not longer than that?"
"Well, I rather doubt it. Marina is one of those people, you know, who are always thinking they've found their heart's desire. But life isn't as easy as that, is it?"
"No," said Mrs. Bantry forcefully, "it isn't."
"It'll mean a lot to him if she's happy here," said Miss Zelinsky.
She ate two more sandwiches in an absorbed, rather gobbling fashion, in the manner of one who crams food into themselves as though they had an important train to catch.
"He's a genius, you know," she went on. "Have you seen any of the pictures he's directed?"
Mrs. Bantry felt slightly embarrassed. She was of the type of woman who, when she went to the cinema, went entirely for the picture. The long lists of casts, directors, producers, photography, and the rest of it passed her by. Very frequently, indeed, she did not even notice the names of the stars. She was not, however, anxious to call attention to this failing on her part.
"Oh, I get mixed up," she said.
"Of course, she's got a lot to contend with," said Ella Zelinsky. "He's got her as well as everything else, and she's not easy. You've got to keep her happy, you see. And it's not really easy, I suppose, to keep people happy. Unless, that is, she hesitated.
Unless they're the happy kind, suggested Mrs. Bantry.
Some people, she added thoughtfully, enjoy being miserable.
Oh, Marina isn't like that, said Ella Zelinsky, shaking her head. It's more that her ups and downs are so violent. You know, far too happy one moment, far too pleased with everything and delighted with everything and how wonderful she feels. Then, of course, some little thing happens and down she goes to the opposite extreme.
I suppose that's temperament, said Mrs. Bantry vaguely.
That's right, said Ella Zelinsky. Temperament. They've all got it, more or less. But Marina Gregg has got it more than most people. Don't we know it? The stories I could tell you.
She ate the last sandwich.
Thank God I'm only the social secretary.
Chapter 5. The throwing open of the grounds of Gossington Hall for the benefit of the St. John Ambulance Association was attended by a quite unprecedented number of people. Shilling admission fees mounted up in a highly satisfactory fashion. For one thing, the weather was good, a clear, sunny day. But the preponderant attraction was undoubtedly the enormous local curiosity to know exactly what these film people had done to Gossington Hall. The most extravagant assumptions were entertained. The swimming pool, in particular, caused immense satisfaction. Most people's ideas of Hollywood stars were of sunbathing by a pool in exotic surroundings and in exotic company. That the climate of Hollywood might be more suited to swimming pools than that of St. Mary Mead failed to be considered. After all, England always has one fine hot week in the summer, and there is always one day that the Sunday papers publish articles on how to keep cool, how to have cool suppers, and how to make cool drinks. The pool was almost exactly what everyone had imagined it might be. It was large, its waters were blue, it had a kind of exotic pavilion for changing, and was surrounded with a highly artificial plantation of hedges and shrubs. The reactions of the multitude were exactly as might have been expected, and hovered over a wide range of remarks. "Oh, isn't it lovely?"
"2 pennyworth of splash here, all right."
"Reminds me of that holiday camp I went to."
"Wicked luxury, I call it. It oughtn't to be allowed."
"Look at all that fancy marble. It must have cost the earth."
"Don't see why these people think they can come over here and spend all the money they like."
"Perhaps this'll be on the telly sometime. That'll be fun."
Even Mr. Sampson, the oldest man in St. Mary Mead, boasting proudly of being 96, though his relations insisted firmly that he was only 86, had staggered along, supporting his rheumatic legs with a stick, to see this excitement. He gave it his highest praise.
"Ah, there'll be a lot of wickedness here, I don't doubt. Naked men and women drinking and smoking what they call in the papers them reefers. There'll be all that, I expect." "Ah, yes," said Mr. Sampson with enormous pleasure. "There'll be a lot of wickedness."
It was felt that the final seal of approval had been set on the afternoon's entertainment. For an extra shilling, people were allowed to go into the house and study the new music room, the drawing room, the completely unrecognizable dining room, now done in dark oak and Spanish leather, and a few other joys.
"Never think this was Gossington Hall, would you know?" said Mr. Sampson's daughter-in-law.
Mrs. Bantry strolled up fairly late, and observed with pleasure that the money was coming in well, and that the attendance was phenomenal. The large marquee in which tea was being served was jammed with people. Mrs. Bantry hoped the buns were going to go round.
There seemed some very competent women, however, in charge. She herself made a beeline for the herbaceous border and regarded it with a jealous eye. No expense had been spared on the herbaceous border, she was glad to note, and it was a proper herbaceous border, well planned and arranged and expensively stocked. No personal labours had gone into it, she was sure of that. Some good gardening firm had been given the contract, no doubt, but aided by carte blanche and the weather, they had turned out a very good job. Looking around her, she felt there was a faint flavour of a Buckingham Palace garden party about the scene. Everybody was craning to see all they could see, and from time to time a chosen few were led into one of the more secret recesses of the house. She herself was presently approached by a willowy young man with long, wavy hair. "Mrs. Bantry, you are Mrs. Bantry?" "I'm Mrs. Bantry, yes." "Hayley Preston," he shook hands with her. "I work for Mr. Rudd. Will you come up to the second floor? Mr. and Mrs. Rudd are asking a few special friends up there." Duly honoured, Mrs. Bantry followed him. They went in through what had been called in her time the garden door. A red cord cordoned off the bottom of the main stairs. Hayley Preston unhooked it, and she passed through. Just in front of her, Mrs. Bantry observed Councillor and Mrs. Alcock. The latter, who was stout, was breathing heavily. "Wonderful what they've done, isn't it, Mrs. Bantry?" panted Mrs. Alcock. "I'd like to have a look at the bathrooms, I must say, but I suppose I shan't get the chance." Her voice was wistful. At the top of the stairs, Marina Gregg and Jason Rudd were receiving this specially chosen elite. What had once been a spare bedroom had been thrown into the landing so as to make a wide, lounge-like effect. Giuseppe, the butler, was officiating with drinks. A stout man in livery was announcing guests. "Councillor and Mrs. Alcock," he boomed. Marina Gregg was being, as Mrs. Bantry had described her to Miss Marple, completely natural and charming. She could already hear Mrs. Alcock saying later, "And so unspoiled, you know, in spite of being so famous." "How very nice of Mrs. Alcock to come, and the councillor, and she did hope they'd enjoyed their afternoon. Jason, please look after Mrs. Alcock." Councillor and Mrs. Alcock were passed on to Jason, and drinks. "Oh, Mrs. Bantry, it is nice of you to come." "I wouldn't have missed it for the world," said Mrs. Bantry, and moved on purposefully towards the martinis. The young man called Hayley Preston ministered to her in a tender manner, and then made off, consulting a little list in his hand, to fetch, no doubt, more of the chosen to the presence. It was all being managed very well, Mrs. Bantry thought, turning martini in hand to watch the next arrivals. The vicar, a lean, ascetic man, was looking vague and slightly bewildered. He said earnestly to Marina Gregg, "It's very nice of you to ask me. I'm afraid, you know, I haven't got a television set myself, but of course my young people keep me up to the mark." Nobody knew what he meant. Miss Zielinski, who was also on duty, administered a lemonade to him with a kindly smile. Mr. and Mrs. Badcock were next up the stairs. Heather Badcock, flushed and triumphant, came a little ahead of her husband.
"Mr. and Mrs. Badcock," boomed the man in livery.
"Mrs. Badcock," said the vicar, turning back, lemonade in his hand, "the indefatigable secretary of the association. She's one of our hardest workers. In fact, I don't know what the St. John would do without her." "I'm sure you've been wonderful," said Marina.
"You don't remember me," said Heather in an arch manner. "How should you, with all the hundreds of people you meet?" And anyway, it was years ago, in Bermuda, of all places in the world. I was there with one of our ambulance units. Oh, it's a long time ago now.
Of course, said Marina Gregg, once more all charm and smiles.
I remember it all so well, said Mrs. Badcock. I was thrilled, you know, absolutely thrilled. I was only a girl at the time. To think there was a chance of seeing Marina Gregg in the flesh. Oh, I was a mad fan of yours, always.
That's too kind of you, really too kind of you, said Marina sweetly, her eyes beginning to hover faintly over Heather's shoulder towards the next arrivals.
I'm not going to detain you, said Heather, but I must...
Poor Marina Gregg, said Mrs. Bantry to herself. I suppose this kind of thing is always happening to her. Patience they need.
Heather was continuing in a determined manner with her story. Mrs. Alcock breathed heavily at Mrs. Bantry's shoulder.
The changes they made here, you wouldn't believe till you saw for yourself what it must have cost. I didn't really feel ill, and I thought... I just must. This is vodka.
Mrs. Alcock regarded her glass suspiciously.
Mr. Rudd asked if I'd like to try it. Sounds very Russian. I don't think I like it very much. I said to myself, I won't be beaten. I put a lot of makeup on my face. I suppose it would be rude if I just put it down somewhere.
Mrs. Alcock sounded desperate. Mrs. Bantry reassured her gently.
Not at all. Vodka ought really to be thrown straight down the throat.
Mrs. Alcock looked startled.
But that needs practice. Put it down on the table and get yourself a martini from that tray the butler's carrying.
She turned back to hear Heather Badcock's triumphant peroration.
I've never forgotten how wonderful you were that day. It was 100 times worth it.
Marina's response was this time not so automatic. Her eyes, which had wavered over Heather Badcock's shoulder, now seemed to be fixed on the wall midway up the stairs. She was staring, and there was something so ghastly in her expression that Mrs. Bantry half took a step forward.
Was the woman going to faint? What on earth could she be seeing that gave her that basilisk look?
But before she could reach Marina's side, the latter had recovered herself. Her eyes, vague and unfocused, returned to Heather, and the charm of manner was turned on once more, albeit a shade mechanically.
What a nice little story. Now what will you have to drink? Jason? A cocktail?
Well, really, I usually have a lemonade or orange juice.
Oh, you must have something better than that, said Marina.
This is a feast day, remember.
Let me persuade you to an American daiquiri, said Jason, appearing with a couple in his hand. They're Marina's favorites, too.
He handed one to his wife.
I shouldn't drink any more, said Marina. I've had 3 already.
But she accepted the glass. Heather took her drink from Jason. Marina turned away to meet the next person who was arriving. Mrs. Bantry said to Mrs. Alcock,
Let's go and see the bathrooms.
Oh, do you think we can? Wouldn't it look rather rude?
I'm sure it wouldn't, said Mrs. Bantry.
She spoke to Jason Rudd.
We want to explore your wonderful new bathrooms, Mr. Rudd. May we satisfy this purely domestic curiosity?
Sure, said Jason, grinning. Go and enjoy yourselves, girls. Draw yourselves baths, if you like.
Mrs. Alcock followed Mrs. Bantry along the passage.
That was ever so kind of you, Mrs. Bantry. I must say, I wouldn't have dared myself.
One has to dare if one wants to get anywhere, said Mrs. Bantry.
They went along the passage, opening various doors. Presently, oohs began to escape Mrs. Alcock and 2 other women who had joined the party.
I do like the pink one, said Mrs. Alcock. Oh, I like the pink one a lot.
I like the one with the dolphin tiles, said one of the other women. Mrs. Bantry acted the part of hostess with complete enjoyment. For a moment she had really forgotten that the house no longer belonged to her.
All those showers, said Mrs. Alcock with awe. Not that I really like showers. I never know how you keep your head dry.
It'd be nice to have a peep into the bedrooms, said one of the other women wistfully. But I suppose it'd be a bit too nosy. What do you think?
Oh, I don't think we could do that, said Mrs. Alcock.
They both looked hopefully at Mrs. Bantry.
Well, said Mrs. Bantry, no, I suppose we oughtn't to.
And then she took pity on them.
But I don't think anyone would know if we have one peep.
She put her hand on a door handle. But that had been attended to. The bedrooms were locked. Everyone was very disappointed.
I suppose they've got to have some privacy, said Mrs. Bantry kindly.
They retraced their steps along the corridors. Mrs. Bantry looked out of one of the landing windows. She noted below her Mrs. Meavy from the development, looking incredibly smart in a ruffled organdy dress. With Mrs. Meavy, she noticed, was Miss Marple's Cherry, whose last name for the moment Mrs. Bantry could not remember. They seemed to be enjoying themselves and were laughing and talking. Suddenly, the house felt to Mrs. Bantry old, worn out and highly artificial. In spite of its new gleaming paint, its alterations, it was, in essence, a tired, old Victorian mansion. I was wise to go, thought Mrs. Bantry. Houses are like everything else. There comes a time when they've just had their day. This has had its day. It's been given a facelift, but I don't really think it's done it any good.
Suddenly a slight rise in the hum of voices reached her. The two women with her started forward.
What's happening? Said one. It sounds as though something's happening.
They stepped back along the corridor towards the stairs. Ella Zielinski came rapidly along and passed them. She tried a bedroom door and said quickly,
Oh, damn, of course they've locked them all.
Is anything the matter? Asked Mrs. Bantry.
Someone's taken ill, said Miss Zielinski shortly.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry. Can I do anything?
I suppose there's a doctor here somewhere.
I haven't seen any of our local doctors, said Mrs. Bantry, but there's almost sure to be one here.
Jason's telephoning, said Ella Zielinski, but she seems pretty bad.
Who is it? Asked Mrs. Bantry.
Mrs. Badcock, I think.
Heather Badcock?
But she looked so well just now.
Ella Zielinski said impatiently, She's had a seizure or a fit or something. Do you know if there's anything wrong with her heart or anything like that?
I don't really know anything about her, said Mrs. Bantry.
She's new since my day.
She comes from the development.
The development?
Oh, you mean that housing estate. I don't even know where her husband is or what he looks like.
Middle-aged, fair, unobtrusive, said Mrs. Bantry.
He came with her, so he must be about somewhere.
Ella Zielinski went into a bathroom. I don't know really what to give her, she said. Salvolatile, do you think? Something like that?
Is she faint? Said Mrs. Bantry.
It's more than that, said Ella Zielinski.
I'll see if there's anything I can do, said Mrs. Bantry.
She turned away and walked rapidly back towards the head of the stairs. Turning a corner, she cannoned into Jason Rudd.
Have you seen Ella? He said.
Ella Zielinski?
She went along there into one of the bathrooms. She was looking for something. Salvolatile, something like that.
She needn't bother, said Jason Rudd.
Something in his tone struck Mrs. Bantry. She looked up sharply.
Is it bad? She said.
Really bad?
You could call it that, said Jason Rudd.
The poor woman's dead.
dead? Mrs. Bantry was really shocked. She said as she had said before, "But she looked so well just now."
I know, said Jason. He stood there, scowling. What a thing to happen.
Chapter 6.
Here we are,
said Miss Knight, settling a breakfast tray on the bed table beside Miss Marple. And how are we this morning? I see we've got our curtains pulled back, she added with a slight note of disapproval in her voice.
I wake early, said Miss Marple. You probably will when you're my age, she added.
Mrs. Bantry rang up, said Miss Knight, about half an hour ago. She wanted to talk to you, but I said she'd better ring up again after you'd had your breakfast. I wasn't going to disturb you at that hour, before you'd even had a cup of tea or anything to eat.
When my friends ring up, said Miss Marple, I prefer to be told.
I'm sorry, I'm sure, said Miss Knight, but it seemed to me very inconsiderate. When you've had your nice tea and your boiled egg and your toast and butter, we'll see.
Half an hour ago, said Miss Marple thoughtfully, that would have been, let me see, 8 o'clock.
Much too early, reiterated Miss Knight.
I don't believe Mrs. Bantry would have rung me up then unless it was for some particular reason, said Miss Marple thoughtfully. She doesn't usually ring up in the early morning.
Oh, well, dear, don't fuss your head about it, said Miss Knight soothingly. I expect she'll be ringing up again very shortly. Or would you like me to get her for you?
No, thank you, said Miss Marple. I prefer to eat my breakfast while it's hot.
Hope I haven't forgotten anything, said Miss Knight cheerfully.
But nothing had been forgotten. The tea had been properly made with boiling water. The egg had been boiled exactly 3¾ minutes. The toast was evenly browned. The butter was arranged in a nice little pat, and the small jar of honey stood beside it. In many ways, undeniably, Miss Knight was a treasure. Miss Marple ate her breakfast and enjoyed it. Presently the whir of a vacuum cleaner began below. Cherry had arrived. Competing with the whir of the vacuum cleaner was a fresh, tuneful voice singing one of the latest popular tunes of the day. Miss Knight, coming in for the breakfast tray, shook her head.
I really wish that young woman wouldn't go singing all over the house, she said. It's not what I call respectful.
Miss Marple smiled a little.
It would never enter Cherry's head that she would have to be respectful, she remarked. Why should she?
Miss Knight sniffed and said, It's very different to what things used to be.
Naturally, said Miss Marple, times change. That is a thing which has to be accepted. She added, Perhaps you'll ring up Mrs. Bantry now and find out what it was she wanted.
Miss Knight bustled away. A minute or two later, there was a rap on the door, and Cherry entered. She was looking bright and excited, and extremely pretty. A plastic overall, rakishly patterned with sailors and naval emblems, was tied round her dark blue dress.
Your hair looks nice, said Miss Marple.
Went for a perm yesterday, said Cherry. A bit stiff still, but it's going to be all right.
I came up to see if you'd heard the news.
What news? Said Miss Marple.
About what happened at Gossington Hall yesterday. You know there was a big do there for the St. John Ambulance.
Miss Marple nodded.
What happened? She asked. Somebody died in the middle of it. A Mrs. Badcock lives round the corner from us. I don't suppose you'd know her.
Mrs. Badcock?
Miss Marple sounded alert.
But I do know her. I think, yes, that was the name. She came out and picked me up when I fell down the other day. She was very kind.
Oh, Heather Badcock's kind, all right, said Cherry. Overkind, some people say. They call it interfering. Well, anyway, she up and died, just like that.
Died? But what of?
Search me, said Cherry. She'd been taken into the house because of being the secretary of the St. John Ambulance, I suppose. She and the mayor and a lot of others. As far as I heard, she had a glass of something, and about 5 minutes later she was took bad and died before you could snap your fingers.
What a shocking occurrence, said Miss Marple. Did she suffer from heart trouble?
Sound as a bell, so they say, Cherry said. Of course, you never know, do you? I suppose you can have something wrong with your heart and nobody knowing about it. Anyway, I can tell you this. They've not sent her home.
Miss Marple looked puzzled. What do you mean, not sent her home?
The body, said Cherry, her cheerfulness unimpaired. The doctor said there'd have to be an autopsy. Post-mortem, whatever you call it. He said he hadn't attended her for anything, and there was nothing to show the cause of death.
Looks funny to me, she added.
Now, what do you mean by funny? Said Miss Marple.
Well, Cherry considered, funny. As though there was something behind it.
Is her husband terribly upset?
Looks white as a sheet. Never saw a man as badly hit. To look at, that is to say.
Miss Marple's ears, long attuned to delicate nuances, led her to cock her head slightly on one side like an inquisitive bird. Was he so very devoted to her?
He did what she told him and gave her own way, said Cherry. But that doesn't always mean you're devoted, does it? It may mean you haven't got the courage to stick up for yourself.
You didn't like her? Asked Miss Marple.
I hardly know her, really, said Cherry. Knew her, I mean. Didn't dislike her, but she's just not my type. Too interfering.
You mean inquisitive, nosy?
No, I don't, said Cherry. I don't mean that at all. She was a very kind woman, and she was always doing things for people, and she was always quite sure she knew the best thing to do. What they thought about it wouldn't have mattered. I had an aunt like that, very fond of seed cake herself, and she used to bake seed cakes for people and take them to them, and she never troubled to find out whether they liked seed cake or not. There are people can't bear it, just can't stand the flavour of caraway. Well, Heather Badcock was a bit like that.
Yes, said Miss Marple thoughtfully. Yes, she would have been. I knew someone a little like that. Such people, she added, live dangerously, though they don't know it themselves.
Cherry stared at her. That's a funny thing to say. I don't quite get what you mean.
Miss Knight bustled in. Mrs. Bantry seems to have gone out, she said. She didn't say where she was going.
I can guess where she's going, said Miss Marple. She's coming here. I shall get up now, she added.
Miss Marple had just ensconced herself in her favourite chair by the window when Mrs. Bantry arrived. She was slightly out of breath.
I've got plenty to tell you, Jane, she said.
About the fate, asked Miss Knight. You went to the fete yesterday, didn't you? I was there myself for a short time early in the afternoon. The tea tent was very crowded. An astonishing lot of people seemed to be there. I didn't catch a glimpse of Marina Gregg, though, which was rather disappointing. She flicked a little dust off a table and said brightly, Now, I'm sure you two want to have a nice little chat together, and went out of the room.
She doesn't seem to know anything about it, said Mrs. Bantry.
She fixed her friend with a keen glance. Jane, I believe you do know.
You mean about the death yesterday?
You always know everything, said Mrs. Bantry. I cannot think how.
Well, really, dear, said Miss Marple, in the same way one always has known everything. My daily helper, Cherry Baker, brought the news. I expect the butcher will be telling Miss Knight presently.
And what do you think of it? Said Mrs. Bantry.
What do I think of what?
said Miss Marple. Now, don't be aggravating, Jane. You know perfectly well what I mean. There's this woman, whatever her name is.
Heather Badcock, said Miss Marple.
She arrives full of life and spirit. I was there when she came, and about a quarter of an hour later, she sits down in a chair, says she doesn't feel well, gasps a bit and dies. And what do you think of that?
One mustn't jump to conclusions, said Miss Marple. The point is, of course, what did a medical man think of it?
Mrs. Bantry nodded. There's to be an inquest and a post-mortem, she said. That shows what they think of it, doesn't it?
Not necessarily, said Miss Marple. Anyone may be taken ill and die suddenly, and they have to have a post-mortem to find out the cause.
It's more than that, said Mrs. Bantry.
How do you know? Said Miss Marple.
Dr. Sandford went home and rang up the police.
Who told you that? Said Miss Marple with great interest.
Old Briggs, said Mrs. Bantry. At least, he didn't tell me. You know he goes down after hours in the evening to see to Dr. Sandford's garden. And he was clipping something quite close to the study, and he heard the doctor ringing up the police station in Much Benham. Briggs told his daughter, and his daughter mentioned it to the postwoman, and she told me, said Mrs. Bantry.
Miss Marple smiled.
I see, she said, that St. Mary Mead has not changed very much from what it used to be.
The grapevine is much the same, agreed Mrs. Bantry. Well, now, Jane, tell me what you think.
One thinks, of course, of the husband, said Miss Marple reflectively. Was he there?
Yes, he was there.
You don't think it would be suicide, said Mrs. Bantry.
Certainly not suicide, said Miss Marple decisively. She wasn't the type.
How did you come across her, Jane? It was the day I went for a walk to the development and fell down near her house. She was kindness itself. She was a very kind woman.
Did you see the husband? Did he look as though he'd like to poison her?
Well, you know what I mean, Mrs. Bantry went on as Miss Marple showed some slight signs of protesting.
Did he remind you of Major Smith or Bertie Jones or someone you've known years ago who did poison a wife or tried to?
No, said Miss Marple. He didn't remind me of anyone I know. She added, but she did.
Who? Mrs. Badcock?
Yes, said Miss Marple. She reminded me of someone called Alison Wilde.
And what was Alison Wilde like?
She didn't know at all, said Miss Marple slowly, what the world was like. She didn't know what people were like. She'd never thought about them. And so, you see, she couldn't guard against things happening to her.
I don't really think I understand a word of what you're saying, said Mrs. Bantry.
It's very difficult to explain exactly, said Miss Marple apologetically. It comes really from being self-centred, and I don't mean selfish by that, she added. You can be kind and unselfish and even thoughtful, but if you're like Alison Wilde, you never really know what you may be doing, and so you never know what may happen to you.
Can't you make that a little clearer? Said Mrs. Bantry.
Well, I suppose I could give you a sort of figurative example. This isn't anything that actually happened. It's just something I'm inventing.
Go on, said Mrs. Bantry.
Well, supposing you went into a shop, say, and you knew the proprietress had a son who was the spivvy young juvenile delinquent type. He was there, listening, while you told his mother about some money you had in the house, or some silver, or a piece of jewellery. It was something you were excited and pleased about, and you wanted to talk about it. And you also, perhaps, mention an evening that you were going out. You even say that you never lock the house. You're interested in what you're saying, what you're telling her, because it's so very much in your mind. And then, say, on that particular evening, you come home because you've forgotten something, and there's this bad lot of a boy in the house caught in the act, and he turns round and coshes you.
Well, that might happen to almost anybody nowadays, said Mrs. Bantry.
Not quite, said Miss Marple. Most people have a sense of protection. They realize when it's unwise to say or do something because of the person or persons who are taking in what you say, and because of the kind of character that those people have. But, as I say, Alison Wilde never thought of anybody else but herself. She was the sort of person who tells you what they've done, and what they've seen, and what they've felt, and what they've heard. They never mention what any other people said or did. Life is a kind of one-way track, just their own progress through it. Other people seem to them just like wallpaper in a room. She paused and then said, I think Heather Badcock was that kind of person. Mrs. Bantry said, You think she was the sort of person who might have butted into something without knowing what she was doing? And without realizing that it was a dangerous thing to do, said Miss Marple. She added, It's the only reason I can possibly think of why she should have been killed. If, of course, added Miss Marple, we are right in assuming that murder has been committed. You don't think she was blackmailing someone, Mrs. Bantry suggested. Oh, no, Miss Marple assured her. She was a kind, good woman. She'd never have done anything of that kind. She added vexedly, The whole thing seems to me very unlikely. I suppose it can't have been...
Well, Mrs. Bantry urged her.
I just wondered if it might have been the wrong murder, said Miss Marple thoughtfully.
The door opened and Dr. Haydock breezed in, Miss Knight twittering behind him.
Ah, at it already, I see, said Dr. Haydock, looking at the two ladies.
I came in to see how your health was, he said to Miss Marple, but I needn't ask. I see you've begun to adopt the treatment I suggested.
Treatment, doctor?
Dr. Haydock pointed a finger at the knitting that lay on the table beside her. Unravelling, he said. I'm right, aren't I? Miss Marple twinkled very slightly in a discreet, old-fashioned kind of way.
Oh, you will have your joke, Dr. Haydock, she said.
You can't pull the wool over my eyes, my dear lady. I've known you too many years. Sudden death at Gossington Hall and all the tongues of St. Mary Mead are wagging. Isn't that so? Murder suggested long before anybody even knows the result of the inquest.
When is the inquest to be held? Asked Miss Marple.
The day after tomorrow, said Dr. Haydock. And by that time, he said... You ladies will have reviewed the whole story, decided on the verdict, and decided on a good many other points, too, I expect. Well, he added, I shan't waste my time here. It's no good wasting time on a patient that doesn't need my ministrations. Your cheeks are pink, your eyes are bright. You've begun to enjoy yourself. Nothing like having an interest in life. I'll be on my way. He stomped out again.
I'd rather have him than Sandford any day, said Mrs. Bantry.
So would I, said Miss Marple. He's a good friend, too, she added thoughtfully. He came, I think, to give me the go-ahead sign.
Then it was murder, said Mrs. Bantry.
They looked at each other.
At any rate, the doctors think so.
Miss Knight brought in cups of coffee. For once in their lives, both ladies were too impatient to welcome this interruption. When Miss Knight had gone,
Miss Marple started immediately. "Now then, Dolly, you were there.
I practically saw it happen," said Mrs. Bantry with modest pride.
"Splendid," said Miss Marple. "I mean, well, you know what I mean. So you can tell me just exactly what happened from the moment she arrived."
"I'd been taken into the house," said Mrs. Bantry. "Snob status."
"Who took you in?"
"Oh, a willowy-looking young man. I think he's Marina Gregg's secretary or something like that. He took me in, up the staircase. They were having a kind of reunion reception committee at the top of the stairs."
"On the landing?" said Miss Marple, surprised.
"Oh, they've altered all that. They've knocked the dressing room and bedroom down so that you've got a big sort of alcove, and practically a room. It's very attractive looking."
"I see. And who was there?"
"Marina Gregg, being natural and charming, looking lovely in a sort of willowy grey-green dress. And the husband, of course. And that woman, Ella Zielinski, I told you about. She's their social secretary. And there were about, oh, 8 or 10 people, I should think. Some of them I knew, some of them I didn't. Some, I think, were from the studios, the ones I didn't know. There was the vicar and Dr. Sanford's wife. He wasn't there himself until later. And Colonel and Mrs. Clittering, and the High Sheriff. And I think there was someone from the press there, and a young woman with a big camera taking photographs."
Miss Marple nodded. "Go on."
"Heather Badcock and her husband arrived just after me. Marina Gregg said nice things to me, then to somebody else. Oh, yes, the vicar. And then Heather Badcock and her husband came. She's the secretary, you know, of the St. John Ambulance. Somebody said something about that and how hard she worked and how valuable she was. And Marina Gregg said some pretty things. Then Mrs. Badcock, who struck me, I must say, Jane, as a rather tiresome sort of woman, began some long rigmarole of how years before she'd met Marina Gregg somewhere. She wasn't awfully tactful about it, since she urged exactly how long ago, and the year it was, and everything like that. I'm sure that actresses and film stars and people don't really like being reminded of the exact age they are. Still, she wouldn't think of that, I suppose."
"No," said Miss Marple. "She wasn't the kind of woman who would have thought of that." "Well?"
"Well, there was nothing particular in that, except for the fact that Marina Gregg didn't do her usual stuff."
"You mean she was annoyed?"
"No, no, I don't mean that. As a matter of fact, I'm not at all sure that she heard a word of it. She was staring, you know, over Mrs. Badcock's shoulder. And when Mrs. Badcock had finished her rather silly story of how she got out of a bed of sickness and sneaked out of the house to go and meet Marina and get her autograph, there was an odd sort of silence. Then I saw her face."
"Whose face? Mrs. Badcock's?"
"No, Marina Gregg's. It was as though she hadn't heard a word the Badcock woman was saying. She was staring over her shoulder, right at the wall opposite. Staring with... I can't explain it to you."
"But do try, Dolly," said Miss Marple, "because I think perhaps that this might be important."
"She had a kind of frozen look," said Mrs. Bantry, struggling with words, "as though she'd seen something that... Oh, dear me, how hard it is to describe things. Do you remember the Lady of Shalott? The mirror cracked from side to side. The doom has come upon me, cried the Lady of Shalott. Well, that's what she looked like. People laugh at Tennyson nowadays, but the Lady of Shalott always thrilled me when I was young, and it still does."
"She had a frozen look," repeated Miss Marple thoughtfully. "And she was looking over Mrs. Badcock's shoulder at the wall? What was on the wall?"
"Oh, a picture of some kind, I think," said Mrs. Bantry. "You know, Italian.
I think it was a copy of a Bellini Madonna, but I'm not sure. A picture where the Virgin is holding up a laughing child. Miss Marple frowned. I can't see that a picture could give her that expression.
Especially as she must see it every day, agreed Mrs. Bantry.
There were people coming up the stairs still, I suppose?
Oh, yes, there were.
Who were they? Do you remember?
You mean she might have been looking at one of the people coming up the stairs?
Well, it's possible, isn't it? Said Miss Marple.
Yes, of course. Now let me see. There was the mayor, all dressed up, too, with his chains and all. And his wife. And there was a man with long hair and one of those funny beards they wear nowadays. It's quite a young man. And there was the girl with the camera. She'd taken her position on the stairs so as to get photos of people coming up and having their hands shaken by Marina. And, let me see, two people I didn't know. Studio people, I think. And the Grices from Lower Farm. There may have been others, but that's all I can remember now.
Doesn't sound very promising, said Miss Marple. What happened next?
Well, I think Jason Rudd nudged her or something, because all of a sudden she seemed to pull herself together, and she smiled at Mrs. Badcock, and she began to say all the usual things, you know, sweet, unspoilt, natural, charming, the usual bag of tricks.
And then?
And then Jason Rudd gave them drinks.
What kind of drinks?
Daiquiris, I think. He said they were his wife's favourites. He gave one to her and one to the Badcock woman.
Now that's very interesting, said Miss Marple. Very interesting indeed. And what happened after that?
Well, I don't know, because I took a gaggle of women to look at the bathrooms. The next thing I knew was when the secretary woman came rushing along and said someone had been taken ill.
End of disc 2.